Hello, my name is Eric, and I'm here with my colleague Martin. How are you doing,
Hello,
Martin?
hello. I'm very, very, very well. It's very warm here in Munich. It's only getting hotter from what we've heard actually in the next few days. The AC is on slash our fan is on. And we're melting away here in the lovely south of Germany. How is London doing?
Tell me about it. I am melting myself. Hot as anything over here in London, but that is summer. Actually, no, it's not summer. I mean, not typical for London at all. We're in a massive heat wave. But anyway, it's preparing me for California next month. So
It's getting warmer and warmer and warmer, and let's try to actually cool us down with some cars that we're going to talk about today, and I think we're going to talk about a bunch of cars, and we have one very, very interesting topic which has to do with car shows, but let's talk and let's start with the very, very new, and I think it was just yesterday when this came out, so it's Wednesday today, Tuesday. The new Audi Q3, very, very new and looks very, very different from the old one that we are very, very familiar with.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you own one of these previous generations, so I'm sure you're quite familiar with it. I think obviously for my perspective, I think it's a very good looking car. It's an evolution of obviously what it was before, in a much more sportier evolution and falling in line with what Audi's been doing in terms of the taut lines, the sportier character that's been initiated under the direction of Mark Lichter. So I think if we look at the previous generation and this new model, it's very much a more aggressive product. I mean, this is more aggressive than the RS Q3, and this is like a conventional model. So the outgoing RS Q3, you kind of knew why. Why it was kind of dressed the way it was, but this car is very much in terms of the aggressive character that we've spoken about on previous podcasts.
And I think for me personally, I mean, you mentioned that we have a Q3 as the company car, so we're very, very familiar with how the car drives and stuff like that. So I expect the new Q3 actually to be on a very, very similar way. But for me, the whole thing is a little bit of a double-edged sword, or two sides of the medal. Exterior, I just don't know about this new one. For me, it's too aggressive. I've known Audis for all my life, pretty much, and they've never really been that kind of super aggressive. They had, obviously, with the old Quattros and stuff like that. There was this very, very sportiness about them, this kind of adventurous kind of point of view. But especially when I look into the front nowadays and I see the grill, it's almost like, oh, I want to eat you. And I find that a little bit difficult, to be very, very honest, especially when you compare it to the interior, which is just super clean, very, very well organized. It's just something where you, even from the picture's perspective, you can feel very, very comfortable. And from the exterior, I'm just not so sure. There's two elements that I don't like. One is the grille. I've mentioned this, I think, before, especially compared to the A1, which I really, really enjoyed. The more I see it, the more I enjoy it, the new one. The grille, not that great, and I just find those wheel arches that look like plastic a little bit strange. I didn't like them on the Porsche concept that we saw in Geneva. I don't like them on that kind of particular car, on that kind of particular Audi. It looks just a little bit, let's say, cheaper than it probably is. But the interior makes up for a lot of that, to be very, very honest. The interior is, in my opinion, very, very well done.
I agree with you. From the aesthetic perspective of the exterior, it's quite aggressive. The interior is, not necessarily a calming environment, but everything appears to be very well laid out. And I'm sure from an Audi perspective, it's going to have very quality materials. Now, looking at it, from a perceived quality perspective, this car does appear very, very well, very refined, very well, organized in terms of achieving that sporty character that its exterior design alludes to. I agree with you in terms of, you know, detail elements from the exterior perspective. You know, the piano black appliques around wheel arches is not anything that I've ever been fond of. I mean, these are areas that are very prone to get damaged. You know, they're near the wheels. You know, they could get pitted, scratched, and in no time, it's going to look very, very bad indeed. So, but I agree with you in terms of interior. It's good, and I think it's also a very good evolution for the product. And I think a lot of people are going towards, you know, wanting to have a sportier car that can kind of, they can identify with. And so we'll see if it is successful. But in terms of typology, you know, in terms of segment as well, this is a very important product for Audi. And I think it's, they've done a good job. You know, I wish they'd toned down the aggression a bit, but overall, I think it's good for what it is.
Yeah, a little bit of less is more, to be very, very honest, but especially from the exterior, but everything from the rest, I do 100% agree, especially interior. I do like the interior a lot on the new Q3. But yeah, and you know, it's gonna be a very, very sought after car. I mean, we see a lot of them down here in Germany. I've seen a lot, you know, in the UK of them as well. When we talk about cars that we see a lot, probably one of the cars that we don't see a lot or won't see a lot over here in Europe is going to be the new Mercedes A-Class sedan, because that is very, very much made for the Chinese market. And we have criticized the A-Class before, especially the new one. But I think we can say from an exterior perspective, the sedan is actually quite nice.
Yes, I do agree. You know, I think it looks nice. It's an A-Class with a trunk. You know, everything ahead of the B-pillar is A-Class as we've seen it before. I think, you know, as a product in order, and as you mentioned accurately, it's definitely been conceived for markets like the Chinese market, which is big on sedans. Also, the U.S. market. I mean, this car, the longer wheelbase version of this car was actually unveiled in Beijing earlier this year. And so it's clear as to which market Mercedes-Benz is targeting with this product. Now, I think from, you know, it still has the problem that I have with the A-Class is its front overhang. And obviously that's still present here in this car. But, you know, in terms of getting someone into the Mercedes brand, this is the entry-level Mercedes, and it does look quite good. You know, the interior, on the other hand, is a victim of price point, I would say, because there's a lot of things that are, you know, have come over from the S-Class in terms of, you know, some identifiable brand elements, if you will, and it just doesn't work as well in a much smaller package. I think they need to scale down some of those elements, and you know, in particular, the door panel just doesn't sit well with me. It looks like a much cheaper product, but again, it is, right? We're not spending six figures on an A-Class. It's not an S-Class, but I think it's a decent product, and it probably will be very successful for the market in which it was created.
Yeah, 100% agree. And I think, I mean, as nice, and I don't want to say great, like I think nice is, and I mean this in a very, very positive, nice way in the English language, not in this kind of, you know, oh yeah, this could be much better. No, it is actually a very, very nice exterior. But I do agree on the interior. The interior, I mean, I have a problem with Mercedes interiors for a long time already. I didn't like this little, you know, touchscreen thingy, tablet thingy that they've done in the generation before this one. Now, I'm not majorly a big fan of the MBUX and this kind of two split screen system, and I'm definitely not a fan of the vents nowadays. I think, you know, Mercedes, grow up, you know, do something new with the vents. I mean, it's just it you know, take do something with them, make it modern. You know, it's, they just look so old school in that kind of regards. And if you then see these screens and then the combination with the vents, and then it doesn't matter if it's in an A-Class or an AMG or in an S-Class or in a C-Class, you know, it's just like you have to make sure that the feeling is modern. And I don't necessarily have that. And especially if we compare that with the Audi, where it is a little bit less is more, where it is quite reduced, but you still have everything that you need. I'm not quite sure if Mercedes is completely up to that. And as you know, as good as work as they do on the exterior, I think they still have a lot to do on the interior. And I don't just want to blame it on the package, because I think they do have certain kind of opportunities to change some kind of things. I don't want to, you know, I don't know what kind of influence marketing has in terms of then, you know, kind of matching the ranges and stuff like that, and, you know, the different kind of car series and all these things. But generally speaking, it looks like a missed opportunity here from the interior. Sorry, the exterior, I think that's not bad. You know, that will sell very, very well, I think, especially in the US as well, especially if we compare it with like a Volkswagen Jetta or something like that. You know, that's kind of a great kind of comparison, and they're going to have a very, very successful market with that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And, you know, the brand image is definitely gearing more towards the younger demographic as well. You know, and as you mentioned, you know, in terms of its competitors, you know, it's a way of getting into the brand, and that brand carries a lot of weight. So, you know, I mean, good job on the design, I think, of the exterior in particular. You know, and it's a good looking car, but I do agree with you in terms of interior. So the next car that I'd like to actually discuss is the Porsche Macan, which is also an evolution. Now, this is a refresh, because, you know, the German companies typically have a 7-year product cycle. So this is a car that was unveiled in 2014, where now it's 2018. It's not entirely new, but it does kind of move into, you know, what Porsche is doing with their other products, in particular from the rear, and, you know, the full length and very thin tail lamp treatment. I think that was very, very well done for this new generation.
Agree. And I think the biggest takeaway from this car in terms of really the design is where Porsche is going. Yeah, I mean, we've seen teaser pictures of the new Taycan, which is pretty much the Mission E, going into production. You know, the headlights obviously have been very, very close to what the Mission E has been, so they've bringing that into this kind of new Macan. The taillights, exactly the same thing, you know, the very, very thin line, a very, very reduced kind of lighting system around the car, which I personally very, very like. I do enjoy that. You know, it kind of started off with the big Bugatti tail light, you know, that was just one big light that was really, really cool, in my opinion. I just personally have a problem with Porsche and SUVs, to be very, very honest. It's just something for me I don't personally like. So I don't really want to judge the Porsche and the SUV. You know, it's just not my cup of tea, to be very, very honest. I'm more excited about, you know, kind of seeing those kind of cues a little bit ahead of then what's going to happen with the Taycan. Is that really going to be hopefully a sports car, or is that just going to be an electric Panamera? This is what is really going to be interesting for us, I think, to see in that sense on this new Macan. To be very, very honest, I saw it, you know, tiny little facelift, you know, a few things that changed. Not really my car that I'm very, very interested in. You know, if we're talking about Porsche, we're talking about some other Porsches. But it is what it is, you know, and I think it will still sell a lot of cars with what it is, of course, from a Macan perspective, because it is one of their most popular cars. You know, it's, if people want to have the Porsche nowadays, it's either the Cayenne or it's the Macan. It's not the 911 anymore. You know, and that's what it is. And I think they're going to do very, very well with it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't doubt that, but you know, obviously, this is another car that was launched in the Chinese market, because they sell a third of all of the Macans produced over there in China. So that, yeah. Is, you know, and again, you know, it's a very subtle refreshes to certain elements, you know, in the bumpers and the tail lamp and things that we've covered. But it's, you know, I'm generally not a fan of SUVs, but, you know, it's like, it's very hard to get away from them, now. And, I think, you know, in terms of, you know, a typology that showcases an individual's kind of, identity, or, you know, someone that wants more practicality, obviously they've taken off. So, you know, it's interesting, but what is particularly interesting again is the fact that this was launched not at any motor show. Obviously, it was launched in Shanghai, which showcases the importance of that car in that market. But it's interesting that a lot of debuts now, even major debuts like Polestar, for example, were made away from traditional motor shows. And I think that is kind of our main topic for this week, discussing what is going on at some of these motor shows and the products that they're attracting at these motor shows. For example, the Singer that was unveiled at Goodwood. And, you know, that's a car, like you mentioned to me earlier, set the internet on fire when it was unveiled. Yeah. And, you know, that company based in California has had a lot of publicity and has shown numerous times over at the Quail in Pebble Beach. Now, you know, with their latest product, they're bringing it over to Goodwood. What are your thoughts on that car?
Okay, so as you mentioned correctly, of course, the Singer Porsche kind of broke the internet. Yeah, it's this particular car is the Kim Kardashian of cars that has come out. Look, it has a big bum. Yeah, let's be very, very honest. And it's just, for me, I do very, very much appreciate Singer Porsches. The original ones, you know, like the very, very first one that came out, and that was kind of the starting point for the company, I really, really enjoyed that one. If I see this one now, this has nothing to do with what I think, you know, a cool 964 should be like. It is too much. It is too wide. Like, you know, the wheel arches in particular, they look like, you know, they've been glued on. I do understand it's about weight reduction. I do understand it's about, you know, performance and all these things. And I can understand also why people absolutely love this kind of thing. But for me, to be very, very honest, this has, it just, and this is, I think, the biggest disappointment for me personally. It is just not a nice looking car anymore, because it doesn't really look like it's a perfect, you know, this is like what we used to from Singer. It's like absolutely perfect. Like the shape's absolutely perfect. You know, like the surfaces are absolutely perfect. And then now you have these wheel arches, of course, to save, you know, weight and stuff like that. And I've asked someone who worked on that kind of car and said, yeah, it was the intention of the designer. And okay, it's full performance, but it takes a little bit away of this kind of glamorous picture that we had of Singer before with these absolutely beautiful Porsches. And now it's just, you know, I'm not so sure. It's just like, it's not my preferred Singer, to be very, very honest. I'd rather prefer the little bit older ones, like the more traditional ones, where they really, like, you know, only changed very, very little, but, you know, subtly just made it extremely, extremely nice. This one for me, just too much. And like I said, and I know a lot of people are going to hate me for that, but it is really the Kim Kardashian of car design at the moment. A lot of people look at it. And on the other hand, of course, you know, it does have a big bum.
I mean, you know, this, I hear what you're saying. This is a very much a different, you know, a different example of what Singer is able to do, because in the past, as you've mentioned, you know, they've taken a 964, so a 1990 era Porsche 911, and transformed it into something that was always kind of the goal, was to optimize it, to, you know, make it sit right, make it, optimize it in every area. So be it, you know, making the panels out of carbon fiber, making, you know, certain improvements to the engine, making it sit on 17-inch wheels, for example. It was always a case of really just like optimizing the vehicle to the max, but also not making it like, you know, showy.
Yeah, exactly.
More of an understated, but, you know, really, really specifically optimized Porsche through various different elements, like the nickel treatment on these cars, for example, is amazing. It's something that is not traditional in the car space. It wasn't chrome, it wasn't loud, it was certain elements, you know, the jewelry type bits that you know, really made it stand out and commanded a presence. And the fact that, you know, all these customers could specify it however they wished to their individual taste was ideal. Now this is, you know, this is a performance beast, you know, but at the same time they try to integrate certain elements of design. So, for example, the seat headrest, the form of that seat headrest is quite pleasing. It's quite nice. I really like the door panels as well, you know, in terms of, you know, taking out material. I mean, there's so many elements on that car that are about optimizing it in terms of reducing weight. And they, basically, that's what it's called. I mean, it's the Dynamics and Lightweight Study, the DLS.
Yeah.
So, you know, in collaboration with Williams, this is a, I'm sure, a performance beast. Like, I don't know figures. I haven't been behind the wheel. I haven't even sat in one. But I did see it sitting up there on the Goodwood stand, you know, and there was a couple of cars that were actually running as well in the up and down the hill climb. I mean, this is Singer's space, you know. These are that's the target demographic that they're looking to hit. But at the same time, you know, it's Porsche's 70th anniversary, and you know, they were showcasing a very different interpretation of, you know, the recent 911, which is the, you know, that Speedster concept study, which is going to make it to production as well.
Yeah. And I think this is the big, you know, just to kind of, you know, not putting this into the wrong way. I do like Singers. You know, that's really not the problem for me. It's just like this Singer was a little bit too much. And, you know, this was pretty much the only reason why I didn't like it. And, you know, it's one of a few that they've made, of course, but that's okay. But talking about the Speedster concept of Porsche, I just asked the question, why? You know, when I think of the Speedster in particular, and I think this is the original Speedster, you know, like the 356 Speedster, the absolute beautiful one, you know, one of the most beautiful Porsches ever made. Very, very simple, super like clean with everything pretty much. I mean, you can ask almost everyone and everybody's like, oh, you know, they're in absolute awe of this kind of car. This new one, to be honest, for a 70th anniversary of Porsche, I was quite disappointed. I would have asked, you know, I would have expected more. If you celebrate an anniversary, then, you know, this is just, for me, it's just not cutting it, to be very, very honest. It's just not enough. I don't think it's something completely new. I think it's, you know, it looks like a, you know, someone like a tuner or like, you know, someone who's not as good a singer has worked on something like that, you know, on a kind of a new Porsche. Yeah. And this is actually the really, really sad thing is because they had this, you know, this really, really nice picture right behind an original Speedster and then this new one. And you're just like, I would never take in the new one. Like the old one is still like, you know, 100 million times better. And I would have, I kind of just would have wished that Porsche would have been a little bit more, you know, would have had a little bit more courage, like, you know, really try to do something new or really go into way more inspiration with the old Speedster rather than just like, you know, the round side mirrors and stuff like that. But
Side mirrors actually take a little bit from the original Speedsters or the original Singers as well. You know, the early Singers that that Rob created had these, but they were nickel plated and they were smaller and rounder. And I think they pay homage to the original better, if I, you know, I mean, but yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Speedster. I mean, like the thing is creating something like this, you know, just raking back the windshield essentially, and probably adding a little bit in terms of power, is, you know, it's an image thing. You know, they're probably not going to produce a whole lot of them. I wouldn't imagine that they would. It's probably going to be a limited series thing.
Yeah.
Just like in the 1990s, and I may have told you this story, you know, when I was a young boy, I was living in New York City, so I was taking the bus back home, and I saw this crowd amassed outside of this dealership. And it wasn't like, you know, a Porsche dealership. It was a dealership that sold all of these crazy, you know, like AMG, whatever, all sorts of like, you know, sports cars. And inside was Mike Tyson, and he was buying a 911 Speedster.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's all about, you know, just getting a small quantity of these cars out there so that people can then continue to talk about the brand. And, you know, the Speedster is something that's going to be, you know, produced in limited form with various enhancements. And I'm not a big fan of it aesthetically, but in terms of like the person that wants to bring the car to Monaco or whatever, and you know, then okay, you know, that's probably who these cars are going to be geared towards, and who they are geared towards, but who they're going to be sold to. So I don't know. I mean, I think that the 911 is the quintessential Porsche model. If you ask anyone about,
yep,
they will tell you about the 911. And so to create something that also attempts to pay homage to another icon, as you mentioned, which was the original 356 Speedster, to celebrate their 70th anniversary, that's you know, it makes marketing sense, shall we say.
Of course. And it actually, you know, this brings us really to our main point that we can discuss, because, you know, you've mentioned this earlier, like the Porsche Macan was shown in Shanghai, obviously making a lot of sense, because, you know, most of their kind of Macans are going to be you know, sold in China. The Speedster was, I think, if I remember correctly, was first shown in the in Zuffenhausen, in their main you know, plant over there, as a kind of a celebratory gift. It's just like, you know, this is what we, you know, what we've done for the 70th birthday. But what we've also seen with Goodwood is that the idea of the traditional car show is becoming more and more obsolete. Maybe not obsolete, but there's definite demise of the traditional kind of car show. We've seen, we've both been to shows such as CES this year, you know, in Vegas, as well as in China. You know, we've been to traditional kind of car shows. We've been to, you know, special kind of events and all these kind of things. But it seems like the time actually for the traditional car shows, where everybody's coming, you know, everybody's meeting up, they show their new cars, both on a concept level as well as on a production level, that seems to be over when we look at it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, if we just look at what's happening in Paris, I mean, there's a whole mess of automakers that aren't showing up there. And there's different reasons for that. You know, it could be one, just a general lack of product, new product. And those motor show stands cost a hell of a lot of money. And, you know, so, I mean, if you look at Paris, like the fact that BMW isn't showing up, Ford isn't going to be there, Mazda, Mitsubishi, Nissan. And that's just half of the list. I mean, there's 8 manufacturers that are skipping it that we know of so far. You know, even brands like Volkswagen, that is the number one car importer to the French market. It's just insane. But at the same time, like I said, and you know, it's all down to economics. You know, I think at the end of the day, renting space in some of these show stands costs a lot of money, and you know, millions. Like, you know, it's not unheard of. And so when you think about what you could do with that amount of money, that budget, in terms of showcasing your product, like Polestar did when they unveiled that car back in the first, you know, the Polestar 1 was shown in Shanghai, yeah, at an exclusive event where they invited the people that they wanted to invite. They had them all flown over. They did a awesome, like, massive thing in like an airplane hangar. The thing was so big. And then they got all eyes on that car. They didn't have to compete for, you know, back in the day it was column inches and no one really, and now it's like website clicks, but they didn't have to compete for visibility with anyone else. So it was a good plan on their part. What's interesting is that Goodwood is basically replacing the traditional motor show, because in the UK there is no motor show anymore. There's like a really small London, exactly, motor show that means nothing. But what is happening at Goodwood is kind of the way that things are going. It's these events that are, you know, peripheral, if you will, from the traditional automotive auto show scene. But at the same time, there's every single manufacturer is out there at Goodwood showing in a, you know, a pop-up tent or stands that they've created, like a two-story, like crazy, you know, showcase of a stand. And they're paying, you know, the Duke of Richmond, I think, I heard, and this might, you know, not be entirely accurate, but that the Jaguar, the JLR stand, was in excess of 20 million pounds. So that's just some ridiculous, ridiculous figures.
And you hit
so many different people coming to the show to see Formula One cars, to see, you know, your bespoke Singer unveiled, to see other things that, you know, as you're traveling around the Formula One paddock, you also happen to see the new Rolls-Royce Phantom or, you know, on the track. So it's a very interesting way of getting, it's the modern motor show way, I think.
Yeah, and it also, I think, has to do with the general kind of way nowadays how we perceive brands. When we look back into, like, you know, Frankfurt as well, and, you know, I think Geneva and Tokyo, you know, to a certain kind of degree as well, those kind of shows are really made for the customers. So, you know, you still show stuff and you show your cars that are supposed to be really sold to the people. Now, you can buy them actually at the shows. So you can sign up for them. You see that in Geneva all the time. Well, you know, all these kind of supercar manufacturers, like, oh, you can sign up for the cars pretty much right away. I mean, I know that, you know, Roof, the company, you know, that that kind of, you know, tunes or, you know, builds their own Porsches as well, similar to a Singer again. Mm. You know, they've had the Yellowbird version 2 or whatever they called it, like, you know, the new Yellowbird, and they pretty much sold the whole lot of it in Geneva. And I think this is really what the kind of perception nowadays of the car shows is probably going to be. It's this kind of advanced, you know, we can see as many cars as possible. Maybe we can buy one here. So the kind of concept car is just a sign of, oh, look how cool we are, so we can pull the people over there. Whereas with something such as Goodwood in particular, you can say this is really for the enthusiasts. So for them, it's not always just about buying a car. It's about enjoying the experience. It's about, you know, building an emotion, building a relationship with a certain kind of brand, or, you know, building on an existing relationship with the brand that a certain person has. And I think those kind of events are much, 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 much more powerful for that. And of course, you know, those kind of private events that just give you way more exclusivity. Mm. You know, if you can say, oh, you know, I've been invited to that kind of event, that's a different kind of story of, you know, oh man, I want to buy that car. You know, I'm really, really interested in that. Like, you know, you're focusing on just one brand. But on the other hand, of course, the really, really downside is we just see fewer concept cars. Yeah, because, you know, they're just not going to do a show for a concept car. I mean, that would probably be way too expensive.
Yes. No, but, you know, like you said, I mean, there's so many different people coming to these events. There's, you know, people from all walks of life, people that want to see, you know, people on the rally stage, people that want to see other, you know, cars racing on the track. But then they have to, it's kind of like when you go to Vegas, right? You're in Vegas and you want to go from your hotel room to the conference center or to the pool or to the breakfast. You've got to walk through the casino. There's no other way to get to the pool than to walk through the casino. And maybe while you're there, you'll drop a fiver on the slots or whatever. And that's basically the way of Goodwood. And because you're tapping into other people that, you know, when I was walking around, Neo had a stand over there and, you know, they showed B9 and there was a girl that talked to, you know, her boyfriend, she like was walking by and she was like, what is Neo? And so it's that way of increasing not only your visibility in the eyes of people that have no idea who you are and could be your potential customers, but it's also, you're very right, the aspect of, you know, being in that space where it's the environment, it's the allure, it's, you know, the exclusive factor. You know, when you go to the McLaren stand, for example, is like this big thing over in the corner right next to the Goodwood house. And then they've got this lavish backyard spread where they've got all of their, you know, clients or, you know, prospective clients, you know, out there drinking champagne. You know, it's like it's a cool day out, you know, for these guys. So, and it's a great way to showcase the brand in a setting that is basically what you're looking to target for McLaren anyway. You know, I mean, those, the buyers of McLarens, let's face it, they're all one percenters, right? So they're the ones they're the ones going to the Goodwood Bowl exactly. With the Duke of Richmond. So yeah, I mean it's interesting to see how people are moving away from the traditional motor show. When I was a kid, you used to be able to go up to any motor show and stand and buy a car on the spot, and you can't do that everywhere anymore. I know you still can in Geneva.
Yeah,
I know probably. You know, certain other shows where you can do that, but you can't do it everywhere. And Detroit was founded on that.
Exactly.
You know, the whole thing is put together by the Detroit Dealers Association. So, and I'm really happy actually to hear that they've decided to move it, because Detroit in January is no fun. And especially now that it's competing against CES, you know, that's another show where, you know, you're attracting a demographic of individuals that are interested in technology, you know, and you don't get that by going to Detroit, you know, and so automakers are really in tune with that, and they're showcasing really amazing new cars at CES, you know, which is an electronics show. I mean, it's really changing the game.
So where do you think, you know, because it's obviously easy for us to kind of analyze or criticize a little bit, but where do you think, you know, the car show is going to go? Do you think it's going to disappear? Do you think we're just going to have fewer of them? Or what is your kind of, you know, future, you know, futuristic, you know, out, you know, or viewing point for the car show in, let's say, 10, 15 years? Do you think we will only have, like, you know, a single kind of car show? So, like, you know, the manufacturer will do their own show. Obviously, things such as CES will become bigger and bigger, and the technology becomes more included. But what is your personal opinion on this?
I think you know, we've seen already a lot of people, a lot of companies rather, flocking to you know, classic car events, and that is kind of an easy one because there's so much nostalgia associated, so much emotion associated with these vehicles that, you know, let's face it, you and I aren't going to go out and buy, you know, Singers. You know, we're not going to go out and you know, maybe, you know, hopefully someday we'll, you know, we'll have that DB5 in the garage or whatever. But it's for now, for us in our lifetimes, and in a lot of, you know, younger people's lifetimes, or lives at the moment, we go there to look at some of these pristine examples of vehicles that were created in a distant past that are extremely appealing from a design perspective, which, you know, now with SUVs, let's just face it, it's not all that exciting anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, to answer your question, in the future, we're going to see a lot more of these, you know, of cars, traditional cars as we know them. I mean, it's going to be difficult to sell autonomous vehicles in a car show, right? But for the immediate future, I think we're going to see a lot more of like Salon Privé, like there is in the UK in September, I think it is. They launched a new event that took place a few months ago. So you got a springtime, you've got a end of summer, you know, show, where there's a bunch of manufacturers that are getting in on that action. Of course, you've got Goodwood. I'm just talking about the UK. But then if you go over to Pebble Beach, you've got, you know, the Concept Car Lawn, which is growing every year. You've got the Quail, which is hyper exclusive, you know, events where you've got all the Singer vehicles over there, as well as others. You know, you've got also, you know, you've got cars that would never display in other shows over there, at these, you know, specific events that are really tailored. I mean, maybe Geneva, right? Because Geneva is all about like the car constructors, you know, the fabs or whatever, you know, I can't even get their names right now, but you know what I'm talking about. These guys that are creating, you know, bespoke examples and customizing things like Roof, you know, you know, that was a good example, but there's a lot of others like tech, you know, tech designs or whatever it's called over in tech art rather in
Germany. In the Stuttgart area.
So,
No, and I do agree in that kind of sense that we can kind of summarize, I think, in a little bit that we say, okay, the car shows will not die, but I think there might be a limit of shows that will survive. So it might just be one, a maximum of two in Europe. I think China might be a little bit different. We see Tokyo already only in a 2-year cycle, you know, and it seems like LA is becoming the main show for the US at this moment in time. So it will just be fewer opportunities, I think, to see those kind of to see the cars, but also the concepts, I think, will have a much, much bigger impact then because you have fewer shows. But let's wrap that bit off here, and we of course would absolutely love to hear from you and your opinion. Where do car shows go in the future? You know, what might happen to them? Maybe there is something that, you know, we don't even know yet that might, you know, evolve into a car show. But we should move on into one of our favorite bits of the podcast, which is who is where. But we're actually going to start off this with a little bit of a sad part, because we had Chris Swenson from Ford has unfortunately passed away. And he was obviously most famous for, I think, just in the past few months, in the past few years, for the Ford GT, the new one. And that was obviously, you know, in terms of design, the biggest news, of course. Marchionne from Fiat Chrysler, the CEO over there, died as well, unfortunately. But Chris Swenson, pretty good career, would you not say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, this Chris, yeah, that was really, really sad news for me to hear. You know, I learned over the weekend that Chris passed away. Unfortunately, he'd been battling cancer. We all know what a horrible disease that is. I know it firsthand. My father passed away from cancer as well. And it's a devastating disease. So I really want to send condolences out to his wife, his two daughters, the entire Ford team, you know, that was working under him.
Yeah.
Chris was a Ford man. You know, he was a car enthusiast first and foremost, but he'd spend his entire career at Ford. And you're right. I mean, the most recent thing that he's probably most well known for is that the Ford GT, which he bought, you know, a few months ago. He took delivery of one. And, you know, I'm happy that he got to see that, you know, and own one and drive it, because there's no greater satisfaction for a designer than to see your car on the road, let alone own one, you know, have one in your garage. So good for him for that. I'm happy that he was able to achieve that. But yes, I mean, a hugely influential designer, a British man, that, you know, he graduated from the RCA. He did a bunch of things, including the first car, which was basically a... Mm-hmm. It was his college degree show, his thesis project that eventually made it into a production car for Ford. So, you know, that was brilliant for him. But then, you know, he's also like massively influential in other areas as well. And, you know, again, through Ford, he did the first generation Puma. He did the he worked on the Cougar, like a bunch of vehicles. I mean, all through his career, you know, going from Cologne in Germany all the way through, you know, to Australia, all the way through to the to North America, where he, you know, was design director for a North American product on for the over there. And yeah. He even did the Fab One from the movie Thunderbirds. I don't know if you've seen that movie. Like it's an amazing, like, just to think, you know, like that he could have had a hand in. I've got a press kit. I've never actually seen the movie. 2004 movie, but the press kit is what I have, and that thing is just phenomenal. And you know,
yeah, he. I mean, you know, he will be missed, I think, for the whole community. Yeah. And he like I said, he will be missed, and, you know, may he rest in peace. But we have, of course, some positive news as well, which is actually people, you know, moving from one place to another. And this would be Alessandro D'Ambrosio, mm-hmm. A Volkswagen man, who, for our surprise, I think we were quite, you know, we were actually quite surprised when we saw this kind of news. He moved over to Mitsubishi as, the executive design director, who apparently will be in charge of the studios both in Japan and in and in Germany. And quite a surprise move. Came a little bit out of nowhere. And also, of course, you know, let's say the question is it needed? I mean, of course, you know, Kunimoto, you know, Tsunehiro Kunimoto, the guy who runs Mitsubishi Global Design, you know, he is getting a little bit older now. I think he's 67, you know, so he's definitely on the outlook for a successor. But, you know, with, you know, Watanabe-san from Nissan moving over just recently, you know, Thomas Bickwood running the German studio, you know, having another guy coming in was a bit of a surprise. But, you know, I think we can be quite interested in seeing what's going to happen with Mitsubishi. I mean, you know, they've shown some cool stuff recently in Tokyo especially. And, you know, you can hope that he's moving it forward. And a long-time Volkswagen man can, of course, help in that, especially in terms of quality.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of things going on over at Mitsubishi. It's definitely exciting times over there at that company, especially since you know, there's the Nissan Renault alliance that bought a stake in Mitsubishi now. That's injecting some much needed cash, and I think you know, in the past, as you've mentioned, they've created a lot of cool concepts. And they've always only remained concepts. And that's a real shame, because I thought there were some promising things. If anything, it was definitely pushing the boundaries on the things that they've unveiled even in the last 4 or 5 years. But again, nothing ever kind of made the transition from a conceptual phase into production. Now, I don't know Alessandro D'Ambrosio. You know, Auto and Design broke this story on last week. Yep. When he came out, when they came out with that article to announce it, and then subsequently, obviously, Mitsubishi has announced, has put out a press release and made their own official announcement. Now, he's going to be the design director of Advanced Design, so you know, he's not going to be doing so. Essentially, he's joining Mitsubishi, which is very much news in itself, but he does have quite a good career, not only at Volkswagen, but also, you know, within the Volkswagen group. So he was head of the concept design studio in Munich for Audi. And that is also something that, you know, is kind of necessary, because not only is he going to be, as you mentioned, leading, you know, teams at three design studios over there in, or two design studios over there in Japan, but also in Germany. So, you know, his kind of experience, I think, in Germany is something that Mitsubishi is kind of looking forward to. And perhaps, you know, they will groom him into taking over for Kunimoto. But, you know, I don't really know if that's the plan or the big picture. You know, there's a lot of other people that have been at Mitsubishi that, you know, could be potentially have been groomed for that role. Now, it's an interesting announcement nonetheless. I do wish him well in his new role.
Yeah.
And I'll be very interested in seeing, you know, what it is that he changes, or, you know, he manages to push through, and how it is that he ends up working with the team over there.
Exactly. And you know, we wish him nothing but the best. I think it's going to be interesting. From what we know, he's probably going to be based in Japan for most of the time. So that's going to be a very, very interesting development anyways. Because, you know, I personally love Japan. It's a fantastic country. You know, Tokyo is really, really nice as well. So a really, really nice adventure. And just very, very quickly to kind of wrap this up, it's not really a move in terms of a big move from company to company. But we have John Saas, who moved... who became actually the head of the Latin American design studio for Nissan. So we stay within the company. And, you know, it was just announced, I think, by Alfonso Baeza, who, you know, just a few months ago already, now they've put out a press release, but he moved internally at Nissan, and he's now heading the studio down in Brazil. So, of course, very, very good for him. But not the kind of biggest move in the sense of, like, you know, he moved from big company to big company, or, like, you know, he left a big company to join a startup, but still very, very well deserved that he got this position. And
he's been at Nissan for a good while. I mean, you know, Besides, you know, he does have experience over there at Mercedes-Benz, and I mean, he's very much you know, an asset for Nissan and as a whole. You know, talking about all sorts of brands, and for him to be over there in Latin America, he really knows what it is that's happening within the organization, having come from Nissan Design America, where he worked on a number of products projects. So he's, yeah, it's good for him as well. But yeah, like you mentioned, it's been, that's a bit old news now, seeing as he moved down there back in March.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, just to kind of wrap it up, because, you know, we've done another over 45 minutes. It's, you know, we're getting into our flows over here. But just to kind of make it, of course, from our perspective, also a little bit interesting from a different perspective, we are still looking for people, of course, for our day-to-day business, in terms of the headhunting and recruiting for people. So in particular, interior guys, we have management positions actually at the moment as well. So when you listen to this on a, let's say, 10 plus year experience level, starting from, you know, exterior, interior, Cullentrum, you know, 3D managers, visualization leads, even to modeling managers, studio engineering managers, please do get in touch with us at, you know, either myself, Martin, at on Twitter, LinkedIn. What else do we have? Instagram, I think we do have as well, to very, very much, you know, to a much delight. Or, of course, get in touch with Eric, again, via LinkedIn, via Twitter, via Facebook, I think, as well, Eric. You're represented as well as on Instagram. And obviously all those kind of connections will be linked here as well. But yeah, so if you are looking for something new, please do get in touch with us. We do very, very much appreciate that. Of course, everything will be very, very discreet and highly confidential. So you don't have to worry about that. And
that's how we work. So yeah, by all means, if you are looking for something, and again, you know, like Martin said, it's more mid-level or senior-level positions. Yeah, please do get in touch with us. Let us know what you're looking for, and hopefully we can find something that will suit you.
Exactly. And to kind of finish this whole thing off, as always, first of all, I would like to thank all the listeners that have joined us on iTunes, Spotify, Podigy, but also on YouTube, where we have added the recorded and actually video version of the episode 4 podcast. We will do that more regularly from now onwards, but we will always do that when Eric is present down here in Munich as well, because we have the nice studio here. So it's not going to be every episode, but probably every other episode. But thank you very, very much for following us, for liking us, for giving us a 5-star rating. Continue doing that. And of course, you know, continue giving us the feedback, especially, and we want to hear about, you know, your opinion about the car shows in particular. Feel free to criticize on, you know, my opinion on the singer as well. I have absolutely no problem with that. And we can also announce that probably not in the next episode, but probably in one of the few ones. We have to wait and see if you know how quickly we can include that. But we will have guests on the podcast, so that's going to be fairly interesting for us.
The new edition, moving up in the world.
Indeed, indeed. And we will try to do that more regularly with the guests and, you know, bring in some other perspectives. But, you know, in the meantime, you have to, yeah, you have to stick to the two of us. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you very, very much for listening again to the fifth episode of the Gestalten podcast. My name is Martin, and on the other line over here is my very, very dear colleague and friend, Eric Galina. And we're looking forward to having you back on board and having you back listening for episode 6 in just about a couple of weeks. Thank you very much, guys. Take care.
Thank you so much, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.